Super Yacht Radio.
Walking the Plank with Pippa and Dave.
And welcome to Walking the Plank with Pippa and Dave. Thanks for being with us today. Pippa is in Florida. I am in Dublin, Ireland, and we have got a guest, Corey Ranslam. Welcome back to Super Yacht Radio, Corey. It's good to have you.
Hey, thanks, Dave. This is my third time, a threefer. I'm excited to be back here with you guys. This is always fun.
What do they call third times? A charm, I think it is.
Charm.
And you're in Omaha, I believe. Is it Omaha?
Yep, Omaha, Nebraska, basically almost right in the center of the United States.
Ah, have you got that nor'easter cold thing blowing through your stuff?
That comes through tomorrow, so we'll get cold temperatures and snow tomorrow. So, yeah, it's on its way.
Ah, cozy.
Is that the dead center of America then, Corey?
It's pretty close. We're pretty close to about the dead center of America here. So,
yeah. Probably dead's not a good word to use at the moment. I've been looking on the news, and we got two big things happening this week. One, and I can't understand why it's getting so much TV time, but you got people getting virus jabs for the COVID anti.
Can we not say jabs? Some people don't like the terminology jab. It's a inoculation
against COVID, fighting that virus.
But we've
also had in the news the virus attacks on American government institutions, and that's been pretty upfront. I mean, at the moment they're saying Russia, but I think they're still looking into who caused it. Which brings us on to the topic that we have today, because last show we spoke about the IMO regulations that are coming into play. The regulations or directives that are coming into play on January 1st, 2021 about cybersecurity readiness and what captains and owners need to do. And that's why we have Corey here to talk sensibly about all these things. So, Corey, can I start off with what's your views on the IMO directives? Do you think they go far enough? Is it a good first step?
So that's a really good question.
That's the last one I'll ask. I will not be asking any more good questions. Downhill from here.
No, every time I'm on the show with you guys, there's always good questions within the 45 minutes or an hour that eventually come through. So, yeah, I think it's a good first step. You know, as you look at the IMO is the body that all the different signatory countries around the world are in agreement. And then, you know, those are just resolutions. And then each country has to implement that resolution based on what their laws, regulations, and different infrastructures. So I think the IMO is a good first step, but I think it's just that as a first step to get people to start thinking about it. And the one thing that you really can't do is you can't come out with, you know, just pages and pages of cybersecurity regulations and then expect boats and facilities to, you know, spend a bunch of money to try to get in compliance in a short period of time. So I think it's a good first step when you look at the regulations. And I think that's what it's going to be with the IMO and even the different countries and the flag states. I think it's going to be a first step, and they're going to be adding to this over the coming years. As like you said, you know, this big solar wind attack that happened, it didn't just affect the U.S. government. It affected a number of large companies around the United States and also other parts of the world. So we see attacks almost on a daily basis. And over the past year, attacks just in the maritime industry against vessels, against facilities, have gone up over 900%. And we see those almost on a daily basis, just on the large yacht industry and the supporting companies in that industry.
I'd like to come to the solar wind thing in a moment, but on the IMO thing, here's something that got me, and I've got a fair amount of experience in IT. I know people will say something smart and derogatory towards me, but I'm willing to accept that. But I've got,
you know, I'm not here. I haven't even been. So hello, hello, Pippa. How are you?
Sorry, Pippa. I actually thought I had you on mute there. I must have accidentally unmuted your button.
You do push my buttons, Dave. You know that.
You know what? It's great being the host on a Zoom conference because you have such power. But we will come to you, Pippa, as well. But maybe I'd love your view on this as well, Pippa.
Would you really? Oh, that's great. Thank you.
It is your show, so I think you should be involved. I tell you what got me. I've been a software developer for 30-odd years. Jesus, yes, 30-odd years. I installed VSAT systems, networks, and all the rest of it. So I'm IT skilled. I read the IMO directives, and I found them quite intimidating. And for somebody who's not IT conversant, you know, doing the risk analysis of these different things and doing this, it struck me that the wording was it's a bit scary. And I just wonder if the average captain, the average boat, can look at this and actually interpret and go with the guidelines. And I don't know if you've read the directives. What's your thoughts, Corey? And Pippa, of course. Let's not forget Pippa.
Oh, carry on, Corey. It's all right. I'm quite happy to. We had this discussion a week ago, of course. So. Yeah.
I tuned in and I actually listened to it. I thought the discussion that you guys had was great. And there was a couple of things I wanted to follow up on that too. So I thought you guys had really good information in that. But I'll try to answer Dave's question. I've read through this directive. I've read through the NIST standards that it references, the other standards that are referenced. I've read through flag state guidance for various flag states. And I think you're right. On some levels, it may be difficult for a captain or even shipboard ETOs to understand some of this stuff. But in the respect, I think the reason why the language is set the way it's set is just like everything else from a regulatory standpoint. I really believe that the IMO and now carrying down to the different flag states, that they want an outside cybersecurity company to come in and at least do an assessment of these vessels' networks. And that's really the right thing to do. And the assessment's really, and I can only speak for my company and how we operate it, they're not that expensive. And there's a number of things that you can do to really take a look at what are your immediate vulnerabilities. And I think that's a good way to go is the captains, the ETOs, the shipboard crews on large yachts have so many responsibilities that, you know, that's work with them to help them get through this. And then also look at, you know, once you have that assessment and the plan in place is to be able to fairly easily add that to, you know, the ISM. And we're really trying to uncomplicate this, you know, from our client's perspective, but not just really look at, okay, how do we get people in compliance with IMO regulations? But it's how can you really look at the shipboard systems to provide protection to those systems, because ultimately you don't want those systems to be compromised, whether they're IT systems or they're OT systems, whatever they are, you don't want those systems on board the vessel to be compromised and the vessel to lose critical data and information, whether it's the owner's information, charter guests, or even issues when you get into to navigation and critical operations.
Yeah. So, I have got a couple of questions that some of our listeners sent in during the last week or so, and I think you touched on the point there about how this will get implemented into the ISM or the ISPS rather of the vessel. And one of the questions, in fact, two people have asked me of. Is there going to be some form of certificate? And if so, who is it going to be issued by?
From what I understand on the certificate side, that's going to be issued by the flag state, because ultimately with the SMS, and the ISM. This is, so the compliance date is January 1st of 2021, but it's, if you read the language, it's the first inspection after that particular date. So when Flag comes on to do an inspection on the large yacht and it happens after January 1st of 2021, they have to have cyber as part of that compliance. Now, there's probably going to be with the Flag states, you know, as you see with every single IMO regulation, is within the first year, there's going to be a lot of leeway in being able to implement this. Again, you know, like you guys mentioned on the show last time, this has been around since 2017 is when this, you know, resolution came out. And the IMO has actually been talking about this since, I think, 2014 or 2015 or even earlier. So this isn't something new. But the Flag state is ultimately the one that will be responsible for coming on to do this inspection and then issue the certificate to say that you are in compliance with, you know, not just this, but all the Flag states. So ultimately the way we've interpreted it is it's the Flag state.
Yeah. And so I think one of their questions is basically how will they prove to whoever is going to issue that final certificate that it's been done? I mean, I see it, the way I see it is a pretty simple survey that's done by, say, you know, yourselves or somebody with that understanding of how that network is set up and who understands the firewall type scenario that's in place for it. Of course, you know, there's also the other end of the spectrum is that when we look at this, do we then have to then look back to the security at the NOC, you know, where the signal lands? There's an aspect of the signal that leaves the vessel, goes to the satellite, comes back to ground. Can that be interpreted as part of the link? You know, there's so many aspects that you can add into this, and you can do it on each and every media that you're using for you know, 4G and, you know, the Inmarsat solutions in place as well. How does the captain, engineer, stroke, person on board, management company, then, you know, give a document to the surveyor? What document are they going to provide?
I think that's a good question. And I can't really speak for the IMO. I've had a number of conversations with people at the IMO in London and the U.S. Coast Guard and a number of other organizations, Flags. And I think what they're really looking for is that third party to come in. So not your shipboard IT provider, not anybody internal to the vessel, but someone from the outside that can take a look at the network and say, hey, this is the assessment that we've done, and here's what we've looked at and what we put back. And then beside not just that, but also here's what, you know, we've done working with the boat to implement protection in place. And the biggest thing to me and what I've seen, and you've probably seen this as well, Pip, is, you know, what type of firewall do you have and how is that firewall configured to be able to provide protection? And is it even the appropriate firewall for your type of vessel? And I know you guys talked a little bit about that on the last show. And I think taking a look at this and being able to say, okay, we've gone through, this is what we've looked at. Here's the plan that's in place to provide kind of the basic level protection. And I think, I mean, you couldn't go and look at, you know, all these other pieces. Okay, what does it look like from the satellite? But we're really looking at, you know, from when the signal hits the boat, whether it comes from 4G, 5G, whether it comes from Wi-Fi in the marina, or whether it comes from the satellite, how is the boat protecting itself? You know, because you look at, okay, our satellite providers, a lot of them have their own network operations center. They have cybersecurity tools they've integrated. So they've done a pretty good job. But, you know, the marina that you pull into, most likely not. They don't have any type of tools or anything that they've done. And then you look at 4G, 5G, what are those networks doing? So we're really looking at protection of the vessel. But the other thing with that I think vessels need to look at is the third party providers on board and how are they protecting themselves? So if you have companies that come on board to update your navigation software, what are they doing to protect the integrity of the vessel? Have they scanned, you know, the thumb drive or whatever medium they're using to be able to provide updates to ECDIS if you have that, or, you know, other navigation software that you're using? And if you have an AV provider that needs to have access and make changes, how is that done? And so I think there's a number of things to, you know, to look at here. But ultimately, I think the flag states will be looking at, okay, have you had someone come in and do an assessment? What does that assessment look like? And then what are you doing to protect your vessel? And not necessarily to say, you know, do you have full-time monitoring through a SOC of all of this? But, you know, what are some of the things that you're doing? Is your firewall configured properly? You know, and that's stuff that you would definitely see out of an assessment. And then who are the security providers that, you know, working with to help you manage this? Because I always differentiate between IT companies and cybersecurity companies. They're not the same. And needs to have a differentiation between those two.
Yeah.
Just being devil's advocate. Yeah, this thing that we're looking at this week, SolarWinds. This was an attack on American governmental institutions, the Defense Department, the Treasury, and these are institutions that have, I would have thought, the top best ever cybersecurity measures and defenses in place. And yet hackers managed to get in. Not only did hackers manage to get in, but they've been in there for apparently months and months, and nobody knew about it. And so I'd ask the question of, a boat goes to take all these measures, which I think, you know, is a good idea. Don't get me wrong. I think a good cybersecurity policy is essential today, especially given the data a lot of these boats carry. But then I hear something like this, and I think, well, you know, what's the point? You know, is any defense that a boat can put in place going to be adequate enough for these hackers? Because, you know, bear in mind, you know, the virus database that protects your average PC or whatever, it's only as good as the last virus it knows about and has managed to unravel and managed to, you know, put in a defense against it. And hackers tend not to use the old viruses that they used a couple of months ago. They're writing new ones. They're looking at how to get around these virus protection and firewalls, etc. So, you know, as a captain, I would wonder to myself, should I not just do the minimum to keep the IMO happy? But let's face it, am I just wasting my time?
So that's a really good question. And so with that, I look at a couple of different things here. Number one, the SolarWinds attack, and I've just looked at some of this, but I know that almost every single U.S. government and almost every government agency for any country around the world is under attack on an hourly basis. Mm-hmm. And you're talking state-level attackers who are looking at attacking this infrastructure, which is different than the people that you're looking at who are attacking the large yacht industry. So from that perspective, that the hackers that you see in the large yacht industry are really hackers of opportunity. They're scanning multiple IP addresses. They're looking at, can we get through the door here? Is there anything that we can get from this particular vessel? And they do this pretty quickly. They're looking at, you know, scanning, you know, really millions of IP addresses to see what they can find. The only exception of that would be, and we've seen this on a very rare occasion, that if the owner of a large yacht is a very high profile individual and hackers are specifically targeting that individual, you would need to put in much greater security measures. But for the most part, in the large yacht industry, and this includes the shoreside businesses and the large yachts, that these are really hackers of opportunity. They're not state level actors that we are seeing going after U.S. government assets. Those state level guys are just not going to spend the time to go after an individual yacht. It's just the payoff for them is not worth it.
So they'd be scanning a range of IP addresses, looking for open ports in that IP, and then seeing if they can use one of those open ports to get into your system. That kind of thing.
Yeah, that's basically what they're doing, is to see, okay, is this, can we get into this vessel's router? Can we get into the firewall? What ports are open? What information? And they do that, you know, it's happening right now on, you know, almost every IP address in the world, that it's constantly ongoing to see, okay, what are the vulnerabilities there? So it's not, for the most part, unless the owner is high profile in being targeted specifically by hackers, which obviously does happen. But mostly what you see in the industry is these are crimes of opportunity, because you're not talking, you know, high level mm-hmm. state actors who are perpetrating the attacks on large yachts or those businesses associated in the large yacht industry.
Okay. So these
are, I think, though, in the commercial field, you know, you think of the value of a 300,000 ton tanker or something, you know, when you look at that sort of value, the ability to place that off station and put it somewhere else is what drove this resolution in the very beginning. I mean, that was the sort of stuff, you know, the protection of cargo at sea before yachts were even thought about as being part of it.
It's also the potential for terrorists.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, sorry, Dave, go ahead.
I was going to say the potential for terrorists to, say, take a tanker that's in the port of New York or something, and if it's got volatile chemicals on it, mess with the temperature controls or whatever, turn it into potentially a giant bomb.
You've been watching too many movies, mate.
No, well, actually, this was one of the things I was reading, that was one of the influences back in 2016 or whatever, in the IMO, thinking, actually, we need to put something in place here, because, you know, there is the data stuff, but there is also the potential on some of these carriers that have chemicals and stuff on board. Some of them have to be kept in a particular temperature range or whatever. And if they're not, they become very, very volatile, and they could actually be used. And I think this inspired, was in 2017, the IMO started putting together the...
that's when it first started putting together. Yeah. But it's been talked about for a long time.
But I never thought of that.
The IMO moves really slow when it comes to any regulation. So, you know, to Pippa's point, I think they started actually talking about cyber back in 2010 and maybe even before that. Mm-hmm. And the committee, the maritime, you know, the MSC finally got together to make this resolution in 2017, and then said, okay, the compliance date is January of 2021. But you're right, the vulnerability exists much greater in the cargo industry. And you're right, these this resolution and now the flag regulations are really promulgated for the cargo side more so than the large yachts. It's just that, you know, being that any large yacht that has a flag approved safety management system, i.e. an ISM plan, you know, it has to be in compliance with this. But the cyber, to me, is, I always tell people, is you need to take a look at your infrastructure, and there's things you're going to need to pay to have done professionally, and that's okay. But what happens is if you don't do anything and there is a breach or an attack, you're going to pay 10 or 20 times that or even more to be able to try to mitigate that, recover data, you know, get critical systems back online. And that's true whether you're a cargo line, a large yacht, a cruise line, it doesn't matter. But the threat is more so potentially with cargo vessels than it is with large yachts. Again, depending on the exception of who a high profile owner may be. I've heard a lot of, and I've not been able to confirm this, but I've heard from a couple of different cybersecurity and intel people that the tanker that went aground off the Mauritius back in July and broke up was actually a cyber attack. But again, like I said, I've not been able to confirm that. And there's been a lot of grumblings in the cyber and the intel community of people that I've talked to, basically off the record, to say, hey, these guys were basically 800 miles off course when they ran hard aground and the ship broke up. And, you know, it's just an example of, you know, the potential of what you can do. And I can tell you that the cargo ships that we've looked at, which has been very few, the protection and their vulnerabilities are 10 times greater than what I've seen in large yachts. So there's a huge vulnerability in the cargo side, even more so than the large yachts. And like you said, what's the potential with cargo and with, you know, with other things? And you start to get into terrorist type activities with that.
You've got to remember too, you know, and I guess we're off point in terms of the yachting community, but with cargo, and all those containers that are on board, there's asset management tracking on the majority of those. So as a whole, it's a completely different picture. We're not just looking at tracking a ship. You're tracking 1,000 or 20,000 containers that are on board it, and they've all got asset management gear on board of them. So, you know, the owner of that container knows where it is at any given time, in theory.
Yeah, in theory.
Till it falls off mid-Atlantic and sinks.
Are they using satellite tracking? Or are they using GSM networks?
No, Iridium trackers. Similar to the stuff we use on pressure drop for the sub, you know, for limiting factor and things like that. There are trackers that we use for those, and you know, we do it on a fair few vessels now with, especially some of the tenders that they tow that are, you know, massive assets in terms of, you know, financial value. It's well worth knowing where that is if the tow breaks somewhere in the Atlantic in the right. middle of the night and it's dark. So yeah, but yeah, it's a massive task in general. So
do you think there's enough in the IMO, Corey?
I think for where we're at right now, I think there is, because like I said in the beginning, you don't want to overwhelm people. If they come out with all kinds of resolutions on this and all kinds of tasks, you're going to overwhelm people so much so that, you know, back to your point, they're going to say, well, forget it. I'll just take my chance. And I think with cybersecurity, you have to kind of stair step your way, you know, into this. Where's our immediate vulnerabilities? You know, what can we do to make sure that we protect the, you know, the front door? And like I said, these are hackers of opportunity. So it's like people driving through a neighborhood looking for signs of intrusion detection systems in houses. You know, the burglars aren't going to go to a house where they see, oh, they've got video cameras and one of those video doorbells, and they've got the, you know, the burglar alarm company signs, and we can see there's things in the windows and the doors. You know, the burglars are going to go to the next house. And so, and this is how I look at hackers in the maritime industry. When you specifically look at large yachts, is they're going to knock on the doors. They're going to look at, okay, what kind of protection is in place? If they, you know, they scan your IP and they see, wow, they have a firewall. The firewall's configured properly. You know, the ports are closed or there's only limited access here. They're going to spend very small amounts of time and say, okay, this is going to be too much for us. Let's move on to the next. Again, unless it's a specific target against a specific vessel because of a specific owner. And that does happen where you will see attackers go after specific owners. But for the most part with yachts, it's usually, yep, we're going to look at this. Okay, this house looks secure. Let's go on to the next. And where's that opportunity?
I think that changes too, depending on where the vessel is in the world. I mean, the marinas in the within the US, for instance, you know, they're pretty much open slather. The passwords to the networks are open. You know, everybody knows what they are. It's not. But then again, you know, something going down through the sewers, going out through the sewers and going out into the ocean down there, as far as a piracy attack type goes, that's it's not the random guy there. They're going to be looking specifically for it. And it goes back to what we talked about last time, Dave, you know, about the various levels of that security aspect. You know, does the chief stew say, "Hi, Mum and Dad, look, here we are standing on the deck of my boat and we're just passing and we're heading to the Maldives, you know, this is the day and date and time and the course we're on." You know, that happens. I mean, we all know it happens. It's, you know, it's the fall over of social media into it. Can you stop it? Yeah, you can block social media, but yeah,
Pippa, that's a great point. So let me, jump in on the marina side of it. Is that was something, so we did a live webinar with some of our partners about a week ago on this IMO topic, and one of the things that we specifically talked about was when a boat decides to go to a marina, you take a look at, you know, the security side of it. Hey, what kind of security does this marina have to protect us while we're here? And I said the thing you need to add on to that checklist is cyber. I have yet to go to a marina or a shipyard in you know, the United States and see that public Wi-Fi systems and their public access internet systems are even configured by their IT people properly. You should not be able to get on a marina's Wi-Fi and be able to see every other boat that's in that marina on that system. That's kind of the first no-no. And so that's something that, you know, that I've seen. So boats should start asking questions when they go to a marina. How are we protected if we're on your Wi-Fi? What are you doing to, you know, protect us? Because if an attack comes in through another vessel or even through the marina themselves, what's the marina doing to be able to protect these boats? And I can tell you right now that I have not seen a lot of protection at all with any of these facilities. And then, you know, to Pippa's point, and I know you guys talked about this the last time, and when I heard it, I was laughing, is all of the social media posts that you go through and see the crew do about where they are, what's going on, what's happening. And unfortunately, you have to go into almost a social media blackout. You cannot be talking about where you are and what you're doing and posting pictures, because that's the easiest way for hackers to get into your vessel and into your operations, is through social engineering. The people are the weak link, and, you know, this whole thing, and need to be trained. And, you know, so I always tell people, hey, it's okay to post stuff on social media, you know, 3 or 4 weeks after it's already done. You know, like, oh, we had a great time here, and we're no longer, you know, in the Med. Now we're in the Caribbean, or we're here, or we're there. And, you know, almost look at a month delay on posting any type of pictures or anything about where you are and what's happening.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Tori, I was on a boat. We finished up a network on a boat a couple of weeks ago up in I won't use the shipyard's name, but it was interesting to see that to log on to the Wi-Fi marina was any of the access points in the whole marina was exactly the same password. There was no whitelisting of any devices, or, you know, to my thought, back into the marina, we all know the MAC address of the device that's going to connect to it. You know, there needs to be a protocol put in place whereby that marina can whitelist that particular device and that particular device only. Everything then goes through the ship to that, through that router to the internet. Because up at this particular shipyard, every single contractor that goes in there is hooked up to the same Wi-Fi network. You know, it's crazy. There's thousands of connections on it when I looked, literally. Thousands of connections, and I could see every other boat in the marina. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's not with a very high level of IT skill. I mean, you know, I know what I'm talking about, but my guys, you know, the guys that run the stuff for me are 25 levels higher than me in terms of what they can do and what they know, you know. So with the basics that I've picked up, all right, maybe a little bit more than the basics, but, you know, with even the stuff that I've got, it was quite easy to go in and tell you quite a bit about the boats, the other boats in the marina.
Yeah, and that's what I think is amazing is how these networks are set up. So we have phenomenal people within our company too that are way, way smarter than me on this. And one of the things that we do is we have basically a regulation in our company that we are not allowed to connect to any untrusted networks. So when we go into a marina, we're not allowed to have any of our people's devices connect into those networks at all, because we look at them as completely, completely vulnerable. And the other thing that I always tell clients is, do not put the name of your boat on your Wi-Fi. So I see it all the time as, you know, this is XYZ Yacht Navigation Network. This is XYZ Yacht Owner Network. This is XYZ Yacht Crew
Network. Yeah, I love network. The Owner Network is the lovely one.
Yeah, and it's amazing to me to see that is to don't label them, because now you're just giving, I can pull up out in front of the marina and say, okay, I want to attack XYZ Yacht. Which network is the most critical? Well, it's going to be the operation or the navigation. Let me just go on to the marina's Wi-Fi because everybody knows the password, or I can put a packet sniffer out there for 24 hours and capture the password anyway, and then be able to log on and go, oh, look, XYZ owner network. Let me see what the owner's doing. Boom, can get into that, you know. Yeah. Oh, navigation. Let me see what they're doing there. Boom, get into that. And most of them, and this is the interesting thing is, you know, you talked about the big orange or red boxes on there that are the firewalls, and I've seen the firewalls with nothing plugged into them. I'm like, yeah. What? You know, what does this do? That's our firewall. Well, it's not helping you. Well, how come? Because you don't have anything plugged into it, and yeah. You know, and it's not managed properly, or even, you know, the intrusion detection isn't even monitored at a basic level. And these are things that the boat doesn't have to do. There's some great partners and providers we work with, and things we do where this stuff can all be very easily managed remotely. And if you have your boat and your firewall and everything configured properly, everybody goes, well, I don't want to do that. It's such a pain if we have to go in it. No, if you're working with a provider, they can help you with that and work through the configuration. Is you shouldn't just be letting the AV company come on and go, oh, we need to reconfigure so we can do this. If things are configured properly, the devices and everything will work together properly if it's updated and monitored. And this stuff is not expensive or difficult, you know, to be able to do. And it's just, you know, I'm amazed when I go on and see it and be able to say, hey, it requires people education as well.
Yeah, far less expensive than ransomware or trying to patch up a problem. Or with a lot of the luxury boats, it's also the boat's name. You know, a lot of things happen and they won't tell people about it because it's bad for their image. It's bad for the name of the owner and the boat. So you don't want to tell charter guests, come on board. We had a cyber attack last week and yeah, everybody's stuff got robbed, but you're safe this week. Come on board and enjoy your charter. You know, it's not going to happen. I think you raised an interesting, you referred to an interesting thing just a little bit ago there, Corey, where most all of the boats that I've been on, they will pay attention to the bridge systems, to the wheelhouse computer, to navigation system, making sure the virus protection is there, is up to date, etc., etc. But then the crew come on with their laptops, and I've yet to meet a captain who's gone, oh yeah, well, we make sure that they all have virus protection and that it's all up to date and that they have malware protection on there. None of the boats do that. And I certainly don't say to the crew, if you go off boat for the day to a cafe, don't connect to their Wi-Fi because it's not trusted. So I think these are very important things because these are very weak links, you know, and yeah, with their uniform and badge on, so you know what boat they're on. And they're in the Blue Lady in Antibes. It's very easy just to infect their laptop and let them bring it back with them.
Yeah. I think, you know, we talked last time about some of the because of the bandwidth restrictions on board, how, you know, quite often updates are turned off and things like that. But there needs to be a written protocol for the boat as part of this ISM, ISPS type thing, whereby there's a protocol you follow. As you all know, we're a pretty diverse, multiple diverse company. We do quite a few things, and ballast water treatment systems is one of our other things. And having recently completed a big system on a boat in Holland, you know, the whole part of that operation to get it class approved is a ballast water management system manual. You know, and so my thought the other day, actually, when I was reading through the manual for this particular vessel, which is put together by the management company, by the ISM management company, was that this is the sort of thing that we need to have on board that every single member of the crew is aware of, you know, so that they don't, if the updates have been turned off on them, you know, because of bandwidth restrictions and things, is that when they step off the boat, that's the first thing they ever do, is to turn it all back on and set it up. Well, not necessarily turn it all back on, but allow the updates because, you know, the machine will still be crying out for them, even though they've been blocked, you know, by us.
That's an easy management tool. That's something to very easily do, and especially with the large yachts, is unlike cargo vessels and cruise lines typically stay on satellite internet all the time. They never shift off, yeah, exactly. Very rarely. But large yachts do. So a large yacht does, you know, pull in somewhere and they connect to, you know, shore-based internet. Number one, you want to make sure that's secure. But number two, that's the best time to do all of your system updates is when you have that bandwidth to be able to, because you really need to do those updates. Yeah, those updates are critical.
But these connections, like the VSAT connections, are not I think very few of them are. You know, they're not pay as you go. You get a connection and it's, I don't know, 5 meg down, 2 meg up or whatever for the month, and you pay whatever you pay. So, you know, one policy maybe a boat could take is at nighttime, when we're not using it, turn on the updates. So as people sleep, yeah, we can still pull it down over the VSAT. And yeah, it's not interrupting with anything.
We already do that sort of stuff. Bandwidth management is—it's pretty simple to do. Actually, it's not hard.
Yeah, you just time it, and you could even have a way of caching these updates, because when you're looking at Apple, you're looking at Windows every day, and you're looking at iTunes quite regularly. So, you know, these massive files can be cached on the boat, and then people can update, you know, as they go along and do it out of hours.
Yeah.
Some good advice there.
Yeah, and that's a really good point that most people don't think of, is if, you know, I've got 10 Windows computers on board, each computer doesn't have to download that update. I can download that update once if your IT is managed properly, and then be able to, you know, update all the computers once that, you know, update is downloaded. And then same with any iOS updates. So, you know, you can do the exact same thing with that. So you can, you know, get the update once and then say, okay, once we have this, boom, we're going to, you know, update everybody's system on board, and makes it a lot easier. And I only say the marina thing back before is if boats, you know, most of them, you're right, they do have unlimited bandwidth, but if there's some issue, you know, where they don't want to do that or don't want to, you know, because they have other operations that they don't want to use the bandwidth for that, it's still pretty simple to do. There's different things you can do to get those updates and make sure everything is monitored and configured properly. And even if you have an outside company like ours or working with Pip and her team that's helping you with that, it's not super expensive, you know, to do those things, just to make sure you have the basic cyber health for your vessel and the people and devices on board.
So, well, one of the other things, which, you know, I guess it's a little bit of a Christmas windfall, will be there's going to be many cowboys out there just waiting to throw the saddle on that horse and ride into the IMO 2021 directives and go, hey, I'm the answer to your cybersecurity, and I will upsell you so much stuff that you don't need. But that's okay, because that's what I'm going to do. Captains are going to have that problem of, you know, first of all, they're used to looking for IT guys to fix their routers or put in their VSATs or whatever. They're not used to looking for cybersecurity advice and to help them with this. What does the captain need to know, and how does he verify that the professional who's shown up at the passer rail, who's got a nice card and goes, I'm here to fix all your cybersecurity woes, What's he got to look for? How does he protect himself against that virulent creature? You like the way I did that? That was good, wasn't it? Yeah.
That's a very interesting point there, isn't it?
Yep.
Trust aspect.
I guess the thing that I look at is there's literally thousands of cybersecurity companies that exist around the world. And one thing that I would look at, does this cybersecurity company work in the maritime industry? And do they understand the specifics of the maritime industry and how this works? Because how we do things on a boat are completely different in some respects when it comes to cybersecurity than shoreside, and have to understand what the limitations are of kind of how the operations work and what you do. So that would be my first thing is to look to see if this company actually has experience or is actually a maritime cybersecurity company. That's all we concentrate on is the maritime industry, vessels and shoreside support companies and that. And then the next thing is, you know, get information from them for their plan of what they want to do to help you. And realistically, I always tell people, look at a plan that goes step by step. So the first thing should be an assessment. That assessment should not be extremely expensive. And through the assessment, then, you know, they should offer to say, okay, there's certain things that we're going to recommend that your existing IT company or ETO on board does. And there's certain things, depending on what the vulnerabilities are, that, you know, us as the cybersecurity company need to handle, but really kind of work hand in hand with the captain on the plan and not look at, okay, well, you need to come in and, you know, we need to do all these things and the bill's going to be $100,000. And a lot of the cybersecurity companies are looking at these large yachts as vessels of opportunity. Like, we had a potential client reach out to us, and they said that one of, and I'm not going to say the name of it, but it was one of the classification societies reached out to them and said, yeah, we can help you with an assessment, and it's going to cost anywhere between $36,000 to $77,000 just for us to do an assessment. That's not any mitigation. That's not anything. And they asked me, and they said, is this right? And I said,
same story last week in Europe.
Yeah. And I said, and they asked me, is this right? And I said, well, for a class society, it may be right. But I said, for cybersecurity, no, it's, you know, the assessment really, it shouldn't be such a huge onerous thing. It's like,
Corey,
what are the immediate vulnerabilities?
All right, Corey, I would have thought you'd come in there and go, you know what, I'll do that for $32,000.
Like I said, it's actually, yeah, it's less than that.
But 28.
Yeah, new Pip.
I mean, we can get into a bidding war right now. Yeah, I mean, if Pip is going to do it for 28, we'll do it for 20.
And what was the name of the company again? Right. 15,000. But no, and the other thing that sets alarm bells off in my head, and I used to hear this kicked around the docks, you know, going back 5-8 years ago, is people hawking their cybersecurity stuff and always putting the label, oh, it's military grade.
Oh, yeah.
I am. Once I hear that, I go, you're talking bullshit. Yeah. It may be military grade, but when that's your only defense, you need this because it's military grade.
Listen, so I spent 8 years in the Coast Guard and I know military grade, and I don't think I would put anything military grade on.
I was just gonna say that. There's a reason they don't make their own stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, I mean, these guys are all trying to figure out as well. I mean, the flag states, if you look at that, they're not cyber experts, so they're trying to figure this out. The U.S. Coast Guard is trying to, everybody's really working to, you know, to try to figure this whole thing out. I've seen a lot of companies come into this industry who say they're cyber experts and offering all these things and say, well, our assessment is $40,000-$50,000 plus we're going to need to monitor all this and we need to do all this, so it's going to be another, you know, $20,000 a month for monitoring. And it's just, you know, it's just, I don't know, I cringe at all that and say, no, that's really, you know, let's take steps here. I mean, you know, we're not protecting government assets here, but do need to provide protection.
My first boss in computer world, way back in the late 80s, he had a saying, and I loved it, stuck with me all my life. In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. And I think coming into the new year, I think a lot of captains are going to be existing in that land of blindness. And I do worry, but I think you're right. The assessment should not be a bankruptcy thing. It should not be excessively expensive. It should be a reasonable price for an assessment.
And 85% of the assessment can be done remotely anyway.
Yeah.
There is some physical aspect on the boat of looking, you know. Most of it can be done remotely. And it's pretty simple stuff, really.
Yeah, and that, yeah, I completely agree with. Yeah.
If anyone's coming to you and giving you those sort of numbers for an assessment for cybersecurity, they're crazy, you know. Just stay away from it.
If the plan doesn't involve, you know, a reasonable assessment, but also kind of a step-by-step of here's what we need to do step-by-step, working with the captain, you know, in putting that plan together, I would be very wary of them. If they come to you with some huge grandiose plan of all these things that they want to do, I always ask them, well, how do you know what needs to be done until you do that assessment? How do you know that you could go on this boat and do an assessment and find out, hey, their firewall's configured properly. You know, they're monitoring this. They understand about intrusion detection. They have, you know, device security. Everything's updated. You know, if you go into a boat and you see that, then you know, there shouldn't be some big, you know, multi-hundred-thousand-dollar grandiose plan. And you really don't know. Like, we've had people come to us and say, hey, this is what we need help with. And we also need help, and to Pippa's point, putting together our internal plans and manuals on how we deal with this. And we've said, hey, it all starts with the assessment, because we don't know anything past that of how to help you until, you know, we work with you on that first kind of standing piece. And then let's put something together that puts cyber protection in place and looks at the most critical things first. And then let's work in a plan that works over time, not something where, well, we've got to write a big check now to do all of this, but, you know, what's the long-term plan, and be able to spread that cost out, you know, over multiple months or even, you know, even years.
The question was put to me at Sunday or Saturday. I was talking to an old friend of mine. He's a captain, 47-meter yacht. He's Croatian captain. And I brought it. I was talking to him, and I said, oh, I was doing this show with Pippa about the IMO, and, you know, what's your plan on that, etc. And he said an interesting thing to me. He said, look, I'm confused. At home, I use this VPN service, and they tell me if I'm on the VPN, I'm completely protected. I'm using VPN, everything's encrypted, and I can't get hit with a cybersecurity or a cyber attack. Why can't I just put VPN on my boat and be done with it? What would you say, Corey?
I mean, that's pretty interesting, but that's, I mean, the VPN is the, I would really have to look at and see how the setup is, but even if you have a VPN on board, there's still vulnerability for your, you know, your onboard systems. Unless everything runs through the VPN everywhere all the time, and there's everything else is closed off, and there's no way to, you know, to get into that. Just because, so like when I'm remote, I access my work stuff through a VPN, but that doesn't mean that there isn't still, you know, the potential for cyber vulnerabilities in my computer, you know, outside of that VPN. But I don't know if I'm really answering the question, if that makes sense. But
so I was interested to, I hung back from answering something there because I wanted to see what Corey would say. But
you were Googling your answer, weren't you?
Yeah, whatever.
I could see your fingers moving.
A VPN is a great solution. Okay. But two, one, you have to, on a vessel, on a ship, you have to remember that VPNs are bandwidth hungry. If you've got limited bandwidth, the VPN is going to slow it down, you know, dramatically. You think about the time it's encrypted, it's sent in every direction twice. It's a massive bandwidth hog. When we're talking about the bandwidths that we use in the marine industry, if you've got a 20, 30, 40 meg connection, you're never going to notice a difference.
Yeah, average boats.
If you've got a 2 or 3 or 4 meg connection, yeah, you are. You're going to notice, you know. And then there is still the aspect of the VPN. When you visit a site somewhere, even through a VPN, it has the potential to slip things through. You like you say, Corey, you're visiting work. You know the other end of it's secure. If you're out there, for, you know, argument's sake, on a VPN looking at porn.
Looking at what?
That I don't know what that thing, what it means. PAWN, what is it? Is it?
Oh, like, yes. It's a
shop with three balls.
I'm more into lobsters these days, for good.
Yeah, whatever. But you know what I'm saying is when Corey's on the VPN to his office, he knows what the connection on the other end is like.
So yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the VPN is a secure tunnel. It's not, you know, end-to-end encryption to say we're looking at every site you're going at. That's, you know, it doesn't do that.
Yeah. So VPNs they're a great idea, and they fix a lot of problems, but they have inherent problems as well in the maritime sector.
And also, you know, bandwidth wise.
The end-all fix of what you're doing. You know, VPNs, the majority of people who use VPNs simply just want to be somewhere else in the world. You know, that's the whole idea.
Want to watch BBC from Spain or something.
Right.
Yeah, like I do, from wherever I am in the world. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's
you know, that's why I use VPN now and again, and I use the free ones, purely to watch, say, a rugby match that I can't, if I was living in Spain or France. and I couldn't get it because it was on Irish TV. I'd VPN it to the Irish station and watch it that way.
You know, all the people, all of our mates that live in China, that's the only way they got to get out.
Mm-hmm.
The VPN's a great idea as long as you know where it's going. You know, if it's between two fixed points, it's a great security aspect tool. But in terms of what it can carry, if you go into other places, it's not necessarily the be-all and end-all of the world.
Yeah. You still need the firewall protection. You still need to be monitoring all of those different things so the VPN doesn't really eliminate the need, you know, for that onboard protection.
So, when we monitor our traffic all the time on every connection that we do, and we've got some yachts that are in some boats and some of the cruise ships that we do that are specifically on VPNs all the time, and they're fairly big bandwidth. And, you know, we notice the protocol. So what, when we see a VPN graph, we only see it in one protocol. We don't see all the other protocols that are taking place internally inside that. You just see it as one protocol, and it's inevitably slower than if it was just an open network.
I think speed would be one of the first things that I think a captain would have to look at and go, we can't take that with our bandwidth, unless you, as you say, you got 40 meg. But if you both got 40 meg, chances are they're getting that because they're running TVs off it as well and other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's you know, always what's happening with us is that you're always getting a TV or you're getting something. Or anyway, what a interesting morning.
It has been.
Yes.
Think Corey,
no one's fallen off this bloody plank yet.
Well, Corey brings a level of maturity to the conversation that I think kept us on the plank.
Yeah.
I was interested in that. I'm like, I get to walk the plank. Hopefully someone falls. This would be great.
Oh, my God.
You've
got
to put a pirate's patch on, though, Corey.
What kind of person are you? Well, we're getting the logos done up for it at the moment, but there is an actual plank involved, and there is a Pippa on it, and there is a me pushing. I'll send you a
That's
copy.
Great. I'm honored to be a part of the first group of shows with you guys. I love being on the radio with you guys. This is a lot of fun. I always have a good time.
Well, we should do it more often. We should do it up to the point that you start looking to get a paycheck.
Yes, I'd be happy to get a paycheck from you guys.
Sorry, I think the recording went there. Corey, I missed that.
He's a terrible payer, mate. He pays in kind.
Exactly. I pay in kind.
And it's not our kind of money.
Oh, that's great. I know other people like that too, so.
Yeah.
Thank you. I thought you were on my side here, Corey. Don't start siding up with Pippa.
Anyway.
We are at the end of our time.
We are. And
I'm not very naughty. I bade you both a farewell. Gnairi, as we say in Ireland, Gnairi on Bohaillath.
I'm sure you do.
May the rose rise to meet you.
All right, okay.
There you go. Bit of Gaelic for you. You've been listening to Walk the Plank here with Pippa, Corey, and Dave. And you know what, Corey, before we go, a quick plug. Tell us about your company. How do people contact you?
Sure, thanks. Our company is imsa.global is our website. You can contact us through info@imsa.global, and we'll be happy to answer your questions about cybersecurity companies, and provide you our expertise. So thanks again for having us on the show. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to everybody.
There you go. And I can guarantee you he does not have a cowboy hat on.
Super Yacht Radio.
He is the real deal. And thanks for being with us again here on Walk the Plank.